All right, I'm back. We were just talking about impermanence and rebirth, life and death. I brought up E equals MC squared. I'm going to stay with the analogy of science. I hope that's okay. It's something I know and I have always found relates incredibly well with the Buddha's descriptions of enlightenment, of life, the process of life. E equals MC squared, I think, is a profound statement on reality that even brilliant physicists are still grappling with today. What the equation says, the E stands for energy, and the equal stands for is. It doesn't mean looks like, or it's exchangeable with, or it means energy is this. Energy can be described in this way. Energy equals matter, and matter is every physical thing we know, down to photons of light and subatomic particles, things we know exist and can't even observe. All matter, all of it, is energy at a certain speed. Why the speed? What's the speed thing about? Well, Buddha explained that all matter is subjective. All matter, all things, including us, and down to the most finite particle, is a subjective experience. So speed is a component in Einstein's equation that says everything's relative, theory of relativity. In other words, if matter is traveling at the speed of light, an almost incomprehensible speed to us humans, time ceases. Now you should be thinking, that's right, because everything we experience in our lives is in relation to time. Without time, there's no difference in anything. There's no differentiation. Great word. Differentiation. You know the symbol yin, yang? That's about differentiation. You write all that stuff down and research that too. I encourage you to read Stephen Hawking's Brief History of Time. Very readable, very amazing read, and short. And you'll get it. You don't have to be a mathematician or a scientist or anything. He speaks in very convenient language we can all get. And he makes a statement, I don't want to spoil it for you, but it'll blow your mind. It's late in the book. But since I brought up yin and yang, the Chinese have a concept that's very interesting. And I think it will be helpful to tie the Buddha's teachings in with the life process and what is this birth-death cycle. What is that? Okay? Again, as I alluded earlier, all things, all matter, is energy. But energy, it's a funny word. You can go, oh, yeah, energy. but what is that? Energy is inherently unstable. If it were stable, it wouldn't be energy. It would just be nothing. But if there's a little bit of dissonance, like in the, it's like the surface of a pond. I'm going to go back to the pond. When a pond is absolutely still, you can't perceive the water. It becomes a mirror of the sky. It becomes the moon in the trees. It becomes something other. All it takes is one fish, a bug, something to disturb the surface, and suddenly it's water again. Understand, this is an analogy. Of course, I know it's water the whole time. But maybe with that visual, you can begin to understand energy. And now I'm going to shift to these Chinese terms because I think they're so beautifully eloquent to describe this. There's a term in Chinese, and I hope I pronounce it right, called wuji or wuji. And to illustrate it, one can draw a circle, an empty circle, wuji. But in truth, it's also a point. And if you remember anything from your math in school, or if you don't, I will describe for you that a point, when we describe a point in geometry or on a map, the point itself doesn't exist. The point is just where descriptive numbers and words converge. Longitude and latitude converge at this point. But the point isn't a thing. It's just where things meet. Does that make sense? So wuji is this implied space, this place. Not a thing, but a place, a space where everything and nothing coexist. It is a space of potential. You see the words now? We're talking about energy. Potential isn't a thing. Potential is a can be. It's a possibility. But it isn't yet. What potential needs in order to manifest something, because potential is everything. It's not a chair. A chair is a manifestation of potential, but it isn't potential. Hope I'm not losing you here. Potential is like a huge, endless repository of can be. So something has to come along at some point. Something has to happen in that big pool of wuji potential that gets attracted to some other aspect within the potential. There's all these potential, and then something within the potential bumps into something else, and the vague formation of maybe I want to bump into something else. It starts so simply. And as soon as an idea starts to form, a thought, I'm trying to put it in human terms now, certain things, certain aspects of energy are attracted to other aspects of energy. There's that attraction, and this is why the words are so important, because this is what the Buddha was talking about. Read the 12-length causal chain, the Nidana, how the Buddha explains the manifestation of anything and everything. It goes through these states of slowly building associations and tendencies, and because of those associations and tendencies, other attractions kind of influence that particular manifestation. And as it collects greater aspects, it at some point becomes enough of an idea or thought that it feels the need to be more, to instantiate, to grasp itself or grasp more of what it is, just through attraction and desire. And at some point, there's enough tendencies that it's attached itself to and conditions that it's made around itself. And those just happen as a result of these things just meandering together, that a desire to manifest as an actual self-perceiving thing is unbreakable. It's unstoppable. It wants to be. And in order to be, it looks for something in being that it is suited to, that's suited to it, that will provide for it the right tendencies and conditions for it to manifest its tendencies and conditions. You see where we're going now? So that entity, which was not an entity, which was just energy, became an entity by a force of will, just an idea, thinking, becoming a thought, becoming a desire to be, became a group of tendencies and conditions that wants to manifest. And in order to manifest, it needs to find a location that will support its manifestation and not destroy it. And that place is provided by a sperm with its own karmic baggage from the male, and an egg, which is provided its own DNA and programming and karma from the female. And if those look like a fit, they're not the same, but they provide an environment for this to manifest, boom, pregnancy. Now, that alone you may have to digest for a while. Because what that means is that you and I, all humans, all animals, anything birthed, that magical word birth, and it is somewhat magical, involves three entities, not just two. We've been taught, most of us, most of our lives, that it's a man and woman that make a child. The truth is, a man and woman provide the opportunity for the manifestation of a child that has an idea of its own. It is a third entity. Now, if you can follow that logic, and it's very well described in the 12-linked causal chain, then it should become obvious to you what happens at death. All of those tendencies and conditions that we've now had a lifetime to influence, to appease some of them, hopefully, and we've made some bad ones and some good ones. But the point isn't bad or good. The point is, can you appease those tendencies and conditions to bring them back to a place where all you are is pure energy? That's the goal. Because if you're just pure energy, nothing affects your tendencies and conditions anymore. Tendencies and conditions become irrelevant. That is enlightenment. That is awareness, complete awareness, awakening. Whether you reach that or not in this lifetime, when you pass away, this body dies. What it leaves behind is that energy. And whatever tendencies or conditions you've expiated and appeased will go back into the energy pool as calm and connected. And those tendencies and conditions that didn't get resolved or that were made poorly will re-enter the energy pool as dissonance. And that dissonance will create a continual searching and looking for, not conscious looking, but just will have attraction to things like itself until, once again, there'll be enough aspects of tendencies and conditions to enamor itself with the idea and have desire for more and create more and more tendencies and conditions to the point where it, not you, but this completely other form of energy will look for a way to manifest itself and look for tendencies and conditions to instantiate. That's not you. That's just the energy playing this game of instantiation and non-instantiation, differentiation, non-differentiation. It's just that this human life, Buddha realized, was the only opportunity for the conscious mind, not the brain, but the knowing of what we are, to properly influence the energy, to calm it, to understand it so deeply that it becomes just this wonderful realization of the life process as an amazing thing. And so that early Buddhism only taught that not the knowledge end of it was all the goal. It wasn't until the later teachings, the Lotus Sutra specifically, where Buddha made it obvious that that wasn't it. That was a very big, important step. But the Bodhisattva way, in concert with the Buddha way, is really the goal. And it's in the words I just used not 2 minutes ago. If your goal to appeasing your tendencies and conditions realizes a state of no influence and calmness, and that integrates back into the pool of energy that all life comes from, then aren't we, in our own way, in our own personal lives, affecting the whole of life? Of course we are. It's the more you think about that, the more huge the sense of responsibility comes to do this. Because we're not just making ourselves happier in this life, but we are making happiness a more pervasive state of being. That's what we mean by Kosen Rufu in Japanese, the desire of peace throughout the world. It doesn't come by shaking hands and making agreements. It comes by all of that happening in a different state of being, in a different knowledge and respect for just the amazing preciousness of the process of life, of which we are just little manifestations, little drops of different parts of it. Just like you can say the whole ocean is salt water, but different parts of the ocean have different temperature, different measures of salt, different components of bacteria, and we call it the ocean, but it has dissonance. It has variation. This is what energy is like. This is what the life process is like. We're just a manifestation of some of it. This is why you hear statements like, we're all one. Well, that's poetic. In a very real, scientific sense, yeah, we're all one. If you took us apart chemically and looked at our cells, even our DNA, there's only slight differences in the way the little checker game of little proteins are attached, but the DNA is DNA. We all have it. So yeah, on a cellular level, there's very, very little that distinguishes any one of us. Although we work really hard to do that, that's part of our human condition. That's part of our tendencies and conditions. I hope I've given you enough to think about. And I hope you now understand why it's easy to say that birth and death are just two sides of the same thing, because they're just a process that's reversed. It'd be more true to say, and I'll leave you with this thought, that when you leave this body, you become part of all other bodies. It's actually really exciting to think about that. But if you still in any way think that there's a repository of you-ness that goes somewhere else, you've completely missed the point. That's just your attachment to this. Gotta let it go. It's the source of all suffering. I got so much more to talk about this. We could talk endlessly. Please feel free to ask me questions. I'll do my best. And if you ask a question that I don't quite understand, I'll tell you, and I'll research it until I feel strongly that I found some responsible and knowledgeable answers that you can apply to your daily life. This is my Buddhist practice. I am a hardcore skeptic, so I need to convince myself of things before I share them with others. And once I feel sure about something, then I can't keep quiet about it. And if you come up one day and you write me a sentence and I go, oh wow, I totally misunderstood all that, I'll cop to it. Don't worry about that. Because I'm looking for truth, not my truth, not Sylvain's Buddhism. I'm looking for the truth. And I keep ending up right back at the Buddha's original teachings. There are a lot of esoteric teachings out there. And they still talk reincarnation, which is really Hinduism. Or they talk about cycles of birth and death. And they don't understand that that's within this lifetime. That you're going through cycles of birth and death at every moment of your life. It's key. It's absolute key. It is for me. And I think in a modern world, those are the terms we need to use. Otherwise, we get lost in magical thinking. And there are no answers there. I'm so appreciative that you took time to listen to this. I really, really appreciate you. Please, please make comments, whatever they are. I can only learn more with you. Thanks. Now we slide the pointer over to stop and...